and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Increasingly, we are seeing more news about the devastating effects of environmental degradation, from Tasik Chini no longer meeting UNESCO's criteria for biosphere reserve status, to the deadly Baling floods in Kedah because of clearing works in the Gunung Inas Forest Reserve, and the degazettement of the Bukit Ceraka Forest Reserve in Selangor. Now, despite all these grim headlines, there are those who are still working tirelessly to protect our environment. How do they view the recent news? Our first guest tonight is Mina Rahman. She's president of Sabah Alam Malaysia and has been practicing public interest law for almost 30 years now, representing grassroots communities and taking on big corporations in Malaysia. Mina, thank you for joining me on the show. Let's start with some positive news. There's been some strengthening of legal safeguards for the environment. Parliament recently passed the reforms to the National Forestry Act that would make it more difficult for state governments to degazette permanent forest reserves without public scrutiny. Mina, how do you think, or how far do you think these legal safeguards go in protecting some of our most environmentally sensitive areas?
Thank you, Melissa, for having me. These legal safeguards will go only in so far as they are really, you know, implemented at the state level with very meaningful regulations on the public inquiry. Now, because what the amendment says is that there would be this public inquiry prior to any decision by the state government to remove the status of the permanent reserve forest. But how exactly the public inquiry will take place is not spelled out or elaborated. This will probably be done at the next stage, which means by regulations. So the extent to which the public inquiry is really meaningful, transparent, and really not just token would be very key. So our experience in other inquiries has shown that usually these legal provisions for inquiries are not taken very seriously. They just follow the law. They call you, those have any objections. And then, you know, somebody asks you questions, you give responses, and then you don't know what happens after that. So this has to change. And so until and unless that changes, we're not really going to see any real reform in terms of real governance, transparency, accountability.
What does it mean to make public inquiries more inclusive and consultative and meaningful? So when you say that to avoid it from just being kind of a token or just a checklist that you're just marking off, what would that entail in your opinion?
It would really entail real interrogation, real concern being given to the comments raised, including in having responses. Because normally we would, you know, in the inquiries that we've taken part in, we would give our views and nobody responds. We don't know how they take into account our considerations. We don't know, whether they are indeed taken into account. So if it's to be meaningful, I mean, these responses must be responded to in terms of whether the state, how the state has considered it, why the state did not consider these objections, and meaningful time frames, right? I mean, if you have a public inquiry, which is to take place, like, say, 2 days, from now, and then you just announce, and people can't take part, particularly the indigenous communities or the local communities who are going to be affected, or the NGOs will not be able to prepare, that's meaningless. So you should give time, a time frame which is proper, adequate time for responses, grounds of decision which has to be given. I mean, these are all, some benchmarks that I would say as important for a meaningful inquiry.
Do you think that they will include that in the regulations, Mina?
Well, we hope that the regulations itself will be consultative, meaning prior to the having the regulations drawn up, that the government, actually the federal government in this case, will actually be consultative. Otherwise, it's pointless. I mean, we don't need any more greenwashing. We really need to be very serious, as we have seen how, you know, the effects, the floods and the drought and the crisis, water crisis and so on. I mean, there are too many examples, and we have about time we really take this seriously.
Well, there are some states that have already made it mandatory for there to be a public inquiry before any kind of accession of forest reserves. Selangor comes to mind as one of the state governments. And yet we still see the headlines of Bukit Ceraka Forest Reserve quietly de-gazetted last month. Are there always going to be ways or legal loopholes, ways around these regulations or even amendments to the law that will do away with the spirit of the law to protect the environment?
I think your point about the loopholes is a very important one. I think the issue really is one of intention, right? I mean, if the government is well-meaning and well-intentioned, and there is a provision of the law, so they have to follow it to the spirit and to the letter. So it's not just tokenism. And in this case, it's it was very disappointing to us. In fact, it was absolutely tragic, that Selangor, all of us have been citing the Selangor Forestry Enactment as an example of a good piece of legislation to allow for public inquiries. And there, Bukit Ceraka, as you say, behind our back. So absolutely no knowledge. What was even more shocking is that when we looked at the Gazette notification itself, the decision taken was actually in 2022, I mean, just recently, right? But it was based on a decision taken 22 years ago by the state Exco. So what they're essentially doing is finding a way to have retrospective effect, meaning if a decision is taken years before this particular public inquiry enactment came into effect, that was in 2016, if I'm not mistaken. So they made a decision, not this government, but the previous Selangor government, made a decision in much earlier than that, in 2000. So they used that to say, oh, this de-gazetting is being done based on a decision made in 2000. This makes a mockery of the law. Because what the state was actually doing is making a decision this year. And when you make a decision this year, you should look at the circumstances this year, not 20 years ago, not 15 years ago, not 10 years ago. So to get away, to get around the public inquiry requirement. So I think so long as states do that to find loopholes, then there would be absolutely no faith or credibility that any one of us will have in the law or in the implementation of the law. So it will be merely be seen by us as pure greenwashing and bad governance. And that's really quite bad.
Well, this seems to be the heart of the issue when we talk about environmental degradation, and we see the disasters as direct repercussions. The recent Baling floods in Kedah was either directly or indirectly caused by the clearing of the Gunung Inas Forest Reserve to make way for Musang King durian plantations, as reported in the news. How do you see the role of governance, and as you mentioned a bit earlier, intention coupled with legal loopholes? How does that all come into play when you are watching all of these natural disasters caused by environmental degradation?
Well, in this case, I would not call it a natural disaster at all, Melissa, because I think it's too easy to blame God, act of God. You know, the what we heard in relation to the Baling floods initial response was this was a water surge, a water phenomenon. I mean, this is becoming a convenient excuse that because of intense rainfalls, therefore you would have floods. But that's not the case. And in the case of the Gunung Inas, it's quite clear that it was because of the durian plantation, the Musang King plantation. And we had to call out on that when the state government of Kedah actually said there was a water surge problem. The responsibility to acknowledge the fact that this was something beyond nature came later. So that it in itself is a major problem in terms of who is responsible and who is taking, seriously and, being held accountable for the actions. Now, and then often there is this blame game, the previous government and the previous government, not this government. What we heard also was that there was a stop work order, which was actually issued by the current government for the Musang King plantation. And what was even more perplexing was the chief minister, the Menteri Besar himself asking questions about the environmental impact assessment? How was the environmental impact assessment allowed for this project in an area which is a steep slope of more than 25 degree, slope gradient? I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, we shouldn't be having questions by Mujibisa. We should be having answers. And so it was absolutely shocking, but even from the Department of Environment, they had actually approved latex and rubber clones in an environmentally sensitive area in a steep slope. Even rubber clones, you replace a forest, a permanent forest reserve here in Gunung Inas, important water catchment source. You know for a fact that once you clear the forest and plant monocultures, now this whole notion of ladang hutan, or in English, you could say forest plantation. Forests and plantations cannot exist in the same sentence. It's really a misnomer. You know, it's like saying a toxic park. You know, one is toxic and then you call it a park. You can't have both. Or, you know, so the point here is that hutan is hutan, forest is forest, fully, you know, with its rich diversity and so on. And it cannot be monoculture plantations, whether it's rubber or whether it is musangking. And so here, you know, it was a disaster waiting to happen, particularly when the villagers, as early as even in 2018 and so on, have been time and again alerting the authorities. This is where I think it's really tragic. When the ordinary person, the villager, has time and again complained about, you know, the impending disaster, nobody gives it. I'm sorry I used that word, but nobody pays attention to them. And then a disaster happens and they are the ones who suffer. So, you know, we were absolutely horrified. And that is why organizations like Sabat Alam Malaysia and 35 other organizations called for a public inquiry, a commission of inquiry, which is being denied by the state government and the federal government.
But there's a report coming out, right, Mina? What is that report and what are you hoping to that report might answer for you?
This is the issue. I mean, the report will come out with some findings. We understand that it is under the purview of the Ministry of Natural Resources, under KETSA, as they would say. We heard it in Parliament that the minister said that his ministry will take charge of that. And the secretary of the government will be conducting the investigations. But all this is behind closed doors again, Melissa. We will have no clue as to who saw what, which agency is actually being taken to task. We would not know. So even if the findings come out, we would actually be quite, you know, skeptical about its credibility. But it's important that the findings are made public, first of all, for whatever they are worth. And we will, have to interrogate that. But if there is no transparency in the process, then the outcome of that process itself is always subject to a lot of question. And this is really unfortunate because such a disaster should have had the proper public inquiry so that the remedial measures, including changes in the law, you know, the company, the Musangking company, what is going to happen to them? Is anybody going to take action against them? Nothing done. And just a few days ago, we also see again another flood there. So what have they done all these days? You know, why isn't action being taken fast enough? And then we understand that there are three other, so-called dams or little mini dams up there in the Musangking area plantation. When is that about, you know, going to breach and collapse? So these are, you know, you and me are very lucky. We don't live at the foothills of the Gunung Inas. But the poor communities, literally people who are poor, and they are the victims of this, and they have not had proper responses. Absolutely no accountability. It's no point for the Menteri Besar to go shed tears. I appreciate his tears, but tears alone are not enough. We cannot allow the people to shed tears, and that's what's more important.
Mina, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Mina Rahman, President of Sabah Alam Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break. After this, we'll come back and focus on Tasik Chini. What is happening there? The lake was granted the status of UNESCO Biosphere Reserve for its rich biodiversity, but now it's found to have no longer met the criteria. We'll discuss more after this quick break. Stay tuned to consider this. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. 2 weeks ago, it was reported that Dasikchini's Biosphere Reserve status from UNESCO was under threat, as the lake was found to have no longer met the criteria to be part of the World Network of Biosphere Reserve. To better understand what this means, we have joining us now Datuk Sri Dr. Mushrifa Idris. She is Honorary Advisor and Former Director at Dasikchini Research Centre under UKM. She is the founder of that research centre and also a specialist in UNESCO Man and Biosphere Programme. Datuk Sri, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate your time. Can you begin our conversation by helping us maybe clarify a little bit about this periodic review process? The reason being is that UNESCO has come out to say that, you know, despite the preliminary findings, Dasikchini's status as a biosphere reserve is not at risk at being not at risk of being revoked at this juncture. Maybe there has been some misunderstanding, particularly in the way the media has framed it. Can you share a little bit about how the process actually works?
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. This is actually, I think this is the fourth time I'm explaining to the media about the auditing of the Biosphere Reserve. Okay, once a place is has been given the statutory name as a Biosphere Reserve, so it comes together with all the concepts, it comes together with all of those things that UNESCO wants member state to do. And now that we have sustainable development goals, we have climate change, we have carbon reduction, so it's very timely that as a country we, and also a member, we belong to this Biosphere Reserve. But it comes with a catch. So every Biosphere Reserve has to be audited, so to ensure that all those things that we want to do, all those things that have been said, all those things that have been signed in the contract have been followed. So this assessment is called the periodic review, which is being reviewed to all the 727 Biosphere Reserves in the world for every 10 years. So Dasikchini Biosphere Reserve has already been, right now, already got 13 years, I think. So it is a laborious filling up of forms, but actually it consists of three parts. And the first part is about a summary and highlights of what we have done to the Biosphere Reserve that we have acquired, and what are the things that we have followed under green economy, under climate change, under biodiversity, under conservation, and so on. Then the part two is detailing it on how this area is useful for the community, and what has been done in the community that has actually gained through this Biosphere Reserve, and the characteristics and aspects. And of course, the part three, with all the documents that need to be attached to this sort of document. So, and now I want to show you who actually prepares the periodic review. So, who's the owner of the Dasikchini Biosphere Reserve? The owner is, of course, state. So land, water, and air belongs to the state. So the state has to prepare in collaboration with all the holders that are of the Biosphere Reserve. And of course, once it has been filled up, all those sections have been filled up, it has to be done in collaboration with the ministry. In here, we have the Ministry of Energy and Natural Resources, KETSA, will coordinate the form in a way that state and the federal are in collaboration to fill up the form, because they are already has sort of part of the contract. Right. So once this form has been formed, then we have another stage. So once both state and federal has agreed, so we have to go to the Suruhanjaya Kebangsaan Malaysia, or the National Commission of UNESCO Malaysia, and through our permanent delegation that is based in Paris, so you hand over to the MEP Secretariat, and the MEP Secretariat will hold a meeting. We call the ICC, or the International Coordinating Council, held in the place where they want to hold, and they discuss. So okay. These are the procedures that you have to go through.
Well, okay. I'm glad that you walked this. It sounds tedious and like a lot of paperwork. I do want to ask you then, is this about the environmental, the state of the environment at Tasik Chini, or is it about a lack of detail in the paperwork that has caused the status to be under review?
If you look at the form is actually available for public to see. So you can open up the website and then check the public, see how tedious it is. Because it when it talks about how do we conserve, under what category of the conserve. I mean, it is all based on what the country wants to do. And as a member state, we have agreed on all those things that I said about sustainability, about the climate change. So what have we done at that stage that we said that we have conformed to this, we have compliance to the all those things that we have said, so that the member state who are in the ICC Council will say that, okay, this is done. Or else, you know, how do you know that, how can you audit if you didn't do audit?
So are there concerns that the environmental degradation in Tasik Chini is damage that is irreversible, that will cause the biosphere reserve status to be lost? I mean, is the research center looking at the current, at the environment in Tasik Chini, particularly as, you know, as you say, I mean, Malaysia only has a few, one of three, if I'm not mistaken, bioreserve sites in this country, right?
Yeah. Okay. The biosphere reserve is not just one organization or one center to take care of it. It is it has a multi-stakeholders. So if you look at the functions again, which you can find in detail at the website, it looks into how do you conserve the area. So once you conserve the area, it has to go to the various environmental acts. We have the Forestry Act, we have the Environmental EQA Act, we have the Akaun Negara, Tanah Negara Act. So these are the things that they want to see, how do we use this act to ensure that we follow our own system for conservation. And the stakeholders, it's not just UKM. UKM is part of the stakeholders of the many functions, meaning that we do the research so that some of the research that we do could be used by the policy, and it can be done as a policy, as it can be used as a policy to make decision. It is what we did in the RKK, the Rancangan Khas Tempatan Tasik Chini, where we have studied comprehensively and in detail on the biodiversity. Mm-hmm. So how many biodiversity, when the inception of the biosphere reserve, so what are the species that found, how many, and what are the water quality of the lake, what are the water quality of the lake? So those are our benchmark. So after 10 years, have we improved on that? So when we talk about degradation, so those are the things that they will look into. And then again, how are the community be involved? So this is about involvement of the community. We can't just say that, okay, this is done. We have had a good biodiversity. We have good clean water, but nobody uses it. You know, it's not part of the community. Doesn't nobody benefits the whole biosphere reserve? So
right.
That also has to be taken into account.
Because part of the program is about how man and environment live together and coexist, and how they take care of it. It's about sustainable development. Can I ask you, in the couple of minutes that we have left, are you hopeful, you're optimistic that Tasik Chini and the efforts to conserve Tasik Chini can ensure that its biosphere reserve status remains?
I, for one, have gone all out to ensure that, you know, the section that the researchers have to do is completed in 10 years, because that's what they want. And of course, we have to ensure the management plan. So how does the state manage the area? Are they conforming to all those plans that they have proposed, all those funds that have been used? And again, because we have to compare our bus reserve with the other bus reserve. So the committee wants to see that it is being fully utilized by the stakeholders. So I am positive. I am very positive. No matter what the media has said, we will get there.
Okay, on that note, Dato Sri, I want to thank you so much for being with me on the show. Dato Sri Dr. Mushrifa Idris, Honorary Advisor of the Tasik Chini Research Centre under UKM. And that's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.